So good morning. Thank you for coming. So glad to be here. I will talk today about some of our recent work examining criminal offending patterns in adults with serious mental illness, looking in particular at some clinical characteristics and gender as important risk factors. I have no relationships to disclose. My collaborators on this project are Jeff Swanson, who's here today, and Marvin Swartz from Duke, and also Sharu Lin and Linda Frisman, who are both here today from Connecticut's Department of Mental Health and Addiction Services and University of Connecticut School of Social Work. So I'll quickly give just a brief overview of the scope of the problem of justice involvement among adults with serious mental illness. We know that each year over 1 million people with serious mental illness enter U.S. jails. Many of them will continue to cycle through the system. About 20% of incarcerated adults suffer from a serious mental illness, which compares to about 5% in the general population, so an indication of serious over-representation in the justice system. And then once in prison, we know that adults with SMI stay in prison longer than their counterparts without mental illness. Then finally, as they're reentering the community, being released from incarceration, ex-prisoners with SMI in particular face extraordinary challenges trying to reintegrate successfully into the community and avoid recidivism. So the problem of overrepresentation for this population in the justice system has been attributed to various legal and policy changes over the last 50 years. Those include deinstitutionalization of our psychiatric hospitals, increasingly restrictive criteria for civil commitment, and insufficient availability of community treatment services that were expected to go along with deinstitutionalization, and also trends in harsher sentencing for drug crimes. So there's also been a lot of thought about looking more at a person level as to what's driving criminal offending in the population of adults with mental illness. There was early consensus around a criminalization hypothesis that really attributed the kind of as a sole cause for offending untreated psychopathology and symptomatology that had it kind of directly resulted in criminal offending. And that thereby then also there was an assumption that offending would be resolved if the individual could gain access to appropriate and high quality mental health care. So more recently there has been an added focus to that in looking both at the need to address mental health needs in the population but also criminogenic risks that they may have as well. With kind of a newer understanding that people in this population will also share risk factors for offending with people in the general population without mental illness. So where the causes for justice involvement in the population are very complex, there are a set of well-established risk factors for offending. One of those is substance abuse. We know that justice involved adults with serious mental illness, among them approximately 75% or more have co-occurring substance use disorders. It's also been demonstrated that the substance use piece is shown to have stronger influence than most psychiatric symptoms on violent behavior. And it's important to note, too, that substance abuse is considered one of the central eight risk factors for criminal offending. So gender is also a very important correlate of criminal offending, but also an ambiguous one in the population of adults with SMI. We know that on average, or in an absolute sense, men are far more likely to offend than women, and that's both in the SMI population and the general population. But interestingly, for adults with SMI, we see in the incarcerated populations, serious mental illness is twice as prevalent among female inmates as it is among male inmates. So gender, there's something operating very differently there in the SMI population as compared to the general population. We also know that female inmates with SMI are more likely than their male counterparts to have co-occurring substance use disorders, with a higher likelihood of drug dependence rather than alcohol disorders among men. And the drug dependence is likely to translate to relatively more drug charges among women. And then finally, of interest for this population, primary psychiatric diagnosis as an influence in criminal offending risk. We know there's a sizable overlap in clinical features of antisocial personality disorder and bipolar disorder, so for impulsivity as an example of that. Antisocial personality disorder is a major influence in criminal offending itself, It's highly prevalent among male inmates at about 50%, and especially those with substance use. From some of our group's earlier work, we found that in a population of adults with serious mental illness in Connecticut, that over a third of the adults with bipolar disorder had some justice involvement, as compared to about 20% of those with schizophrenia. And finally, some other recent research has indicated that adults with bipolar disorder were at especially high risk for multiple incarcerations. So the aims of this analysis were really to try to understand how gender, primary psychiatric disorder, and co-occurring substance use disorder interact to influence risk for offending in this population in a way that may be beyond additive. So our the analytic sample came from a study population of about 25,000 adults who were clients in Connecticut's Department of Mental Health and Addiction Services who had either a schizophrenia spectrum disorder diagnosis or bipolar disorder diagnosis and was a client of the agency in a two-year period, fiscal years 2006 and 7. So we then matched those clinical data to a range of criminal justice data, including arrests that led to conviction, incarceration, probation, parole, jail diversion, program participation, forensic evaluations, and forensic hospitalizations. So we had a nice broad scope of justice involvement that we were able to observe in our data. So our outcomes of interest for the analysis, we did looked at a set of outcomes. The first was kind of the most global measure we looked at was risk for any type of justice involvement in those categories that I just mentioned. We also looked specifically at risk for any convicted arrest, and then also convictions in specific categories of interest, including violent crimes, risk for felony charge, or felony conviction, drug crimes, minor crimes. And then lastly, we looked at risk for incarceration. So our primary independent variables of interest that I have already indicated were gender, their primary psychiatric diagnosis, and the presence of substance use disorder diagnosis. We also had data on age and race and ethnicity to include. So we ran a set of logistic regression models. We stratified those by gender and created four interaction categories that represented all possible combinations of gender, psych diagnosis, and substance use diagnosis. And then we included in all our models, we controlled for the effects of age and race and ethnicity. So this is a quick look at the sample characteristics for the full population of 25,000 adults that we analyzed. And you'll see that, not surprisingly, adults with co-occurring disorders were significantly younger than those with mental illness. Those with co-occurring disorders were also more likely to have bipolar disorder than schizophrenia. And among men in particular, men with co-occurring disorders, about half had schizophrenia and half had bipolar disorder, where among men with no substance abuse problems, they were far more likely to have schizophrenia. So about two-thirds had schizophrenia if no substance abuse was present. For women, on the other hand, bipolar disorder was far more common, and it was also far more common among those. It was also far more common for them to have co-occurring substance abuse. So about two-thirds of women with co-occurring disorders had bipolar disorder, and those with no substance abuse, about half had bipolar and half had schizophrenia. So looking at the patterns of justice involvement by co-occurring disorder status, we see that also, not surprisingly, those with co-occurring disorders had higher rates of justice involvement across many categories as compared to those with no substance abuse. So that included jail, probation, jail diversion program participation, felony convictions, and several different types of convicted arrests. Interestingly, as I'd pointed out, that men are, you know, have a much higher absolute risk for offending than women. Interestingly, what we see in the data is that women with co-occurring disorders, in fact, were more likely to offend or have criminal justice involvement than men with no substance abuse, which is quite surprising, actually. So that included jail, probation, jail diversion participation, and several different types of crime, including property crimes, drug crimes, DWI. So it's surprising to see some groups of women offending more than certain groups of men. So these are a look at the results from our regression models. I'm presenting the data for the outcome of the broadest measure that we had, outcome measure for any criminal justice involvement, but I'll point out that the trends we saw for all of the outcomes we tested, including incarceration risk and conviction risk, were very consistent with this. You can kind of extrapolate these to those outcomes as well. You can see that men with substance abuse and bipolar disorder had the highest absolute risk here for offending. So a probability of 0.6 of having some kind of justice involvement in the 2 years' time. That was also the group at highest risk for women. And you can see that risk in both men and women kind of incrementally went down as the presence of those particular risk factors were not present. So if we look at these results comparing across primary psychiatric diagnoses, you can see in men, among those with substance abuse disorders, having bipolar disorder raised the risk for offending. It was their risk for offending was about 1.5 times higher than those with schizophrenia, where among men with no substance abuse, bipolar disorder conferred about twice as high a risk of offending as compared to those with schizophrenia. We saw the same pattern in women, but it was even more marked among those with no substance abuse, where bipolar disorder for women really increased their risk by about close to 3 times for having some justice involvement during the 2 year study period. But now if we look at the results comparing across substance abuse diagnosis, here is where you see the really marked increases in risk that are conferred with having a substance abuse diagnosis. For men with bipolar disorder, adding substance abuse raised their risk 2 times. For men with schizophrenia, adding substance abuse raised their risk almost 3 times. And you can see that where it was most marked and influenced was among women with schizophrenia. Adding substance abuse for them raised their risk for some sort of justice involvement by over 6 times. So to summarize the results, we saw that men with bipolar and co-occurring substance use had the highest absolute risk of offending in every category of justice involvement that we tested. But we also saw that bipolar disorder and substance abuse had especially strong relative influences for women, increasing their offending risk much more dramatically than it did for men. And finally, substance abuse appeared to have the greatest influence on offending risk for both men and women, especially for women, and especially for women with schizophrenia. So I think the results can give some very early insights into prospects for targeting interventions in this very heterogeneous population to address specific treatment needs, with maybe better targeting could potentially lead to better results in reducing recidivism and meeting treatment needs. So, for example, women with schizophrenia and substance abuse, with looking at the results here, would suggest that treating their substance abuse problem effectively could dramatically reduce their risk of justice involvement in the future. I think the results also highlight the need for integrated mental health and substance abuse treatment for those with co-occurring disorders. And, of course, also there's a need to address behavioral health needs, but also their basic criminogenic risks that they share with others in the general population, and also basic social service needs that they have to keep them from rotating in and out of the system. So next steps for us, we have a new small grant from NIDA to examine gender differences in adults with co-occurring disorders who participated in Connecticut's statewide jail diversion program. We'll be able to look at these particular subgroups of interest and follow them from the time that they were diverted from the accepted the opportunity for jail diversion, entered into the community, see what types of treatment services they used, and then understand how those treatments, how those services may have influenced their subsequent risk for reoffending and also some of their more clinically related outcomes. And so hopefully with that we'll be able to identify some of these differential effects and how they relate to actual program outcomes. So with that I'll stop and say thank you. Look forward to that.